Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills from LFG, and today we have a very special episode for you, looking into the mind and the story behind the man, the myth and the legend, Ryan Optic J Musselman, who is now the president of Infinite Esports and Entertainment, but was formerly the 12-year number two behind Optic Gaming. Ryan, thank you very much for setting aside some time to jump onto the show.
Absolutely, man. I love the man, myth, and legend. I don't know which one I like more in all of that. I'll take either one of them, though, or either of the three.
Well, let's see how the next kind of 30 minutes go. Yeah. Okay, maybe you can pick one.
It could become dismissed altogether for all we know. I'll take that, too.
Very possibly. So, as an FYI, before we dive into the show, it's become pretty public that I'm going to be making the transition into joining Infinite Esports and Entertainment over in Dallas, Texas, that I'm super happy about. But what I'm quite keen to do is to take everyone who's been on the journey with me on the podcast so far, kind of along for the ride over the next few months. Like, we don't want the quality or the consistency of the show to change. We don't want the quality and the consistency of the show to change. Unless it's going to be going up. And that's kind of what we hope to be doing over the next few months. So this episode will be kind of be an opportunity for me and Ryan to kind of break down what Infinite's scope and vision is, and also kind of go into his story, actually seeing how esports has evolved over the last few years. So Ryan, before we get started into what you and I will be doing together in the near future, why don't you just kind of take us through your personal journey for a few minutes? You know, how did you get stuck into this wonderful world of esports, and what made you return to the helm with Hex with Optic a few years back?
For sure. You know, overall, I've been in esports probably for 10 years or so, and in many different facets. After college, I went into corporate recruiting and was working actually with a bank for a few years, but was doing sidebar consulting on the side for esports, or at least the growing world of digital. And it wasn't until 2010 when I stepped into a role with Machinima and was there for a good 4.5 years building out their network. Machinima at the time was, still known as a multi-channel network, but their approach was to say, hey, on YouTube, we own the gaming space and we want to be the MTV of the gaming generation. In fact, I think a couple of MCNs were really focused on that, and so there's nice competition, but we were out there recruiting YouTube influencers and Justin TV streamers. At the time, Twitch was Justin TV, and it was an exciting time because you got to see this new medium really take shape and start to pioneer the way an industry would ultimately be influenced. So there's gaming influencers who just care about their content, but there are also the esports influencers who are creating content but then training on a daily grind to be the next competitive monster out there. So seeing those networks develop, building a sales program around that, learning to monetize that, develop a platform approach, everything. You wear hats of many different shapes and sizes, and all different kinds of focuses really come into play, and it starts to shape who you are as a well-rounded professional. And I think ultimately that's what helped determine the next step in my life, which was to go to Google for a few years. So from 2014 to 2016, I actually got to go to Google, and it was an honor to be tapped by them. I was not looking so much as they were focused on building out their vertical. I was pretty content, but it worked out, and it was an honor to go over there and team with some of the smartest people I've ever met. I mean, the culture over there is very, very performance-driven, and you're meeting with people from all over the world who have done something of significant value, and they offer a lot of unique perspective. So to be able to help grow and focus on institutionalizing in a good way, right? Being almost an entrepreneur within a company that has incredibly unlimited resources in
sure.
a sense.
Like one of the main lessons that kind of sticks with you from that time, be it in how you manage those around you, what kind of leader you want to be? Because I imagine that must be a pretty formative experience on the journey, right?
Absolutely. So everyone, everyone around you, they're very proactive, and they take their career into their own hands. And it's not it's not as if they turtle into their own shell, and I'm not saying this in a way where they're only focused on growing themselves, but they will truly look at every aspect of how they're contributing to the business and ask how they can be better. And it's not just they ask the question and they stop there. They'll go through and take steps. So there's a strong culture within Google that allows you to go out of your comfort zone to learn and apply new skills. Learn and apply is my motto, is you really need to learn and apply. So when you see this happening, you see people stepping out not only of their comfort zone, but stepping into new areas to learn new parts of the business that would allow them to focus on what they're trying to initiate and accomplish. You start to see just a strong proactive leadership, whether they were a leader or not, or whether they were leading a project versus a team of people. So I think that really influenced the way I started to look at my own personal career, but also the career development of others, because you would see just this hand of teamwork, you know, one hand shaking hands with the next, and you'd see deals closed, new ideas come to the table. It was very refreshing and a strong reminder of how productive people can be when they aim to develop a strong culture of teamwork.
Awesome. Yeah, that's super smart. And I think it's something that the industry could benefit from, is having more and more people that kind of step up to the plate and are looking to kind of, the jack of all trades skill set is already something that's pretty well desired in esports already from like a recruitment perspective, but having those in kind of the leading organizations that are looking to kind of add value rather than just fill the day-to-day and be happy with their lot, you know, that's the kind of hunger that you want. So just take us up to the last year when Optic was acquired by Infinite.
Sure. So Optic, you know, leading up to the year, or at least leading up to the final time before going to Infinite, was we were looking at our business and saying, where do we really believe our future is? And Optic, for those who do know, we're really good at content with our fandom audience. But even our content is really, I believe that is going to not pivot, but there's going to be more of what we're good at and less of what we're bad at. I think we need to think through that, right? Or at least less of what's where we don't shine. Maybe we should start thinking about, okay, it was an interesting test, and maybe we cut that off and start focusing on the items where we're really good at storytelling, which is the real-time narratives of our pro players and how it fits into the overarching theme of the industry or what's happening in that year or that season of esports. So leading up, we're asking ourselves these questions. How do we go from just being strong on YouTube to actually building a content business that continues to grow the brands of our players, continues to set us apart from all other orgs, but allows us to further say that, hey, we're not just a team that is scaling, but we're managing other aspects of the ecosystem, from sales to content to youth academy development, and we're positively influencing all of these aspects that make up the greater good of esports, and we're raising the tide across the board. And those questions helped us decide ultimately where we wanted to end up and what kind of partner we wanted to work with. And we were having lots of meetings, man. We were, you know, we looked at in Florida, we looked at staying in Chicago, New York was an option, LA, Atlanta. So there were many different opportunities all over the map. I wouldn't say across the board, because it definitely got to specific regions, and mostly was Midwest, I'd say. But we did ask ourselves those challenging questions, and I think where we ended up is in a good spot with Infinite.
So if you read back over some of the biggest pieces of news that have gone down in the industry over the last few weeks and months, say if you include the $10 million esports stadium that's being set up in Arlington, Texas, as well as Jake and Raucus from the Houston Outlaws actually being on the Today Show last week, quite a lot of the kind of casual fans might not realize that all of these activations are actually going on under the same roof as Infinite Esports Entertainment. So I know that there's been multiple conversations internally about what does Infinite seek to be and what does the legacy of the organization want to leave on esports, but in your own words, how would you characterize the org and what do we dream for the industry as a whole?
How would I characterize Infinite or Optic?
Infinite.
Yeah, so I see Infinite as, to put it plainly, but also in a very large perspective, I think part of what our vision is to really positively impact lives through the vehicle of esports. So it's I'll give you a couple examples, but going back to what I was saying just before, you know, before Infinite, Infinite as a whole, we're looking at the industry and saying, how do we impact the greater ecosystem? And what does it look like to run an esports holdings company, the largest esports holdings company in the world, that is focused on various parts of the industry, but the most critical aspects of the industry and some of the less explored influences from other industries that could play a positive impact, such as performance and wellness or a youth academy. So when we were designing the overall approach, it became very apparent that there's some just must-haves, and that's the content side, because we have, from the OPTIC perspective, a very rich culture and content. We want to continue to curate that, but also push the boundaries of what we're doing and extend to different relationships and different business models within content. And then, of course, sales and sponsorships, right? Teams that have a large audience need to be able to monetize that audience. It's Mark Zuckerberg a long time ago, and I know he's kind of under fire right now for various things, but he did say one really, really great point, and it was, it's one thing to have an audience, but what do you do when you get all of the audience there? And if you can't do anything with an audience when it gets there, then you know what do you really have? And so we have this big audience. We're like, well, great. How do we influence youth culture through the GGEA Academy, which is an academy that just really is hyper-focused on finding the all-star before she or he is the next all-star, but finding that path and developing and curating the path for an amateur player to become pro. So we're asking ourselves, how do we define that? And what it all really came down to is that, yes, we'll get into sales and content and marketing. Those are key drivers that will help develop and build these other parts of the ecosystem. And then we started digging deep and asking ourselves, okay, from the academy side, what do recreational sports look like? What does a development league look like? Should we be working with colleges and high schools? And those are questions we're still asking ourselves on how best to participate. But even from the performance and wellness side, right, because it's not just about training, but from the performance and wellness side, we're looking at not just diet and nutrition, but cognitive abilities, the mobile analytics side. How do we apply the analytics to designing training programs? And how does that fit into the overall lifetime value of a pro esports player, which actually many people might not know this. It's relatively short. It's between 3 and 5 years. But then what do they do after that? So is there a way for us to extend the life of a pro esports player, but also set them up for future success so they can pivot down the road when they're ready to not be on the main stage of competition? So those questions, those are being perpetuated throughout the company, and we're really challenging ourselves to answer them and provide real value to the people outside of the company who are asking them as well.
Quite a few of the listeners that have been with us since the start over the next 6 months will probably smile at your mention of the importance of building up the path to pro in all forms of grassroots ecosystems, as that's been one of the main points that I've been harping on about since I've really been working in the space. Really, it's been a massive area of interest for me, because a lot of the massive numbers of investment and the focus from non-endemic brands, you would assume, has been at that kind of 2 to 5% of the industry, whereas the kind of unique advantage and also disadvantage of having a sports network of purely online fans is that, you know, you've got this massive interconnectivity, but you've got a huge lacking of infrastructure to really tie everyone together. So it's really awesome to see what GGEA have been doing already, and I'm super excited to continue to see how the scale of their operation rolls out. But at the same time, massive parallels on the sports and performance piece as well. We've seen now, this is definitely a meme for the podcast, because I always speak about mixed martial arts, so you have to excuse me for 1 second, Ryan, but we've seen a massive evolution in kind of the training standards for MMA over the last few years as well. Like, you used to have fighters that were grinding in the gym for like 6 hours a day, super hard sparring sessions, and their bodies would just completely give out. They'd be half concussed by the time they even got to fight night. And we've kind of seen an evolution in the best way to optimize performance in esports as well. You know, if a person would choose to grind 2 hours of extra solo queue and then not sleep appropriately, then that's probably going to actually be more detrimental than it is actually provide them with an extra edge. Perhaps actually taking some distance from the game and having more focused practice and actually focusing more on the kind of the strength of mindset around being able to make super important snap decisions in high stakes moments. Maybe that's better than an extra 4 or 5 hours of solo queue or ranked when you might be damaging your wrist. So there's a massive amount of experimentation and growth and kind of refinement of best practice on the athlete side of esports, which I think is super exciting. And having spoken with one or two of the guys that are leading the performance piece with Infinite, you know, they have strong NFL backgrounds and it's super structured, and you can already tell by some of the feedback from some of the players that they're actually really enjoying it, and also quite surprised and engaged by these kind of alternative methods that aren't just, yeah, you have to go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week.
I do believe we have the right people who are starting to shape the future of the industry. Someone like Taylor, who's come from a traditional sports background with the 49ers, the way he's really thinking about impacting the daily lives of these pros and these amateurs who are looking to go pro is pretty incredible. They've already set up we have the physical location, right? We have the gym, we have the you know, the diets and the right eating plans and stuff. And that's I look at that as not, that doesn't make up the greater program at large. If it's just about a location, then it doesn't mean anything, right? You can have a library, but if you don't go there to read or you don't go there to check out books, and really it's just a building with a lot of paper in it. In the same way, if you have a gym and you've got a lot of weights and nutrition and you don't do anything with it, there's no program behind it, there's no way to impact lives, and you just got a lot of stuff in a single location that's not being used. And so they've really put together a good way of engaging and getting responses from the people, you know, our pro players, our amateurs who are looking to be pros. And it's just pretty incredible to see how Taylor and his team are thinking about the business. A lot of it we can't quite reveal yet, but it is a programmatic way of looking at health and wellness and fitting that in to the daily routines of being a pro player. Part of the myth as an esports athlete is that, okay, they're just in the basement all day training. And if that was the case, and certainly maybe that is with some players, we don't want it to be the case with ours, then you're actually starting to become an underperformer. I believe, and as Taylor believes, or I support his belief in this, that you will lag behind if you're not taking care of even the simplest things such as sleep. And he can get into this study. I think he'd be a great guest for this show. But he was covering a study on a panel the other week and speaking to a parent who was asking about how to think about the way he interacts with his kid in esports, especially from the health perspective. And part of the study that Taylor was talking about was that if someone in the esports space is not getting enough sleep, and if they go to train or they go to perform on stage, it can be so bad, it can have such a negative impact that it's almost as if they're playing drunk. So if you think about that from the perspective of, man, just something as simple as getting on a better sleep routine in addition to diet, health, exercise, and mental preparation, how it can positively impact or be negatively impacted if you're playing like you're drunk, right? Your play style, which of course infects your team play style, it just becomes this huge chain of events that if it's left to its own accord or not nurtured properly, things can go wrong.
Yeah, that's exactly the same from, like, you don't even have to be trying to play at the highest level for that. You know, if I'm mentally exhausted and I want to sit down and play a game of Dota, like, unless I'm with a friend and I'm already being kind of engaged and distracted and kind of extra enthusiastic, then I find that my performance drops off pretty sharpish. So 100% agree with that. We'll definitely have to get Taylor on the show once there's a little bit more that we can talk about in the public arena. But I, for one, am super excited to be coming on board. And once everything is sorted from the internal legal side and everything is properly public, we'll be kind of leveling up the esports Roundtable podcast in a few other ways, and looking to kind of expand on the story of what Infinite is doing without kind of polluting the kind of impartiality of the show as much as we can. So let's leave that there for now. Super excited to be coming on board. Let's kind of take a step back and look at the wider state of the business side of esports just for 1 second. Obviously, with the huge amount of investment that's been rolling into the space over the last 2 years, there is a huge onus on the publishers, teams, and also startup companies to be able to demonstrate that this industry can make a return on investment. Be that through sponsorship, through merchandise sales, or through a variety of other ways of actually providing value to the fans so that they are more incentivized to start becoming more commercially active in the space. It's not a popular thing to say, but there is a massive luxury of being an esports fan when so much of the content is free. And I don't really think that the public side of a competition will change, but I think that for the investment to continue in the space, then we're going to have to work out a better way to get fans involved from a commercial perspective. Could you really just take us through your view on, I mean, as sensitively as possible for some of your competitors, but the general state of maturity around how esports organizations and publishers are speaking with kind of the household name, non-endemic brands, and what kind of perception esports is actually giving of itself to, you know, a sports merchandising brand, a automotive organization. What's the state of it at the moment, and what are the kind of main areas that the industry as a whole can make some major improvements upon?
For sure. So I do believe the space is maturing. There was, and there still is, there's this big question is, what is esports and why would anyone watch it? And you could really apply that question across the board. If someone says, why would I watch this esport title? I could say, well, why would you watch this MLB game, or why would you watch this NBA game? And it's almost as if people don't understand that esports is a spectator sport. But what's good is that when you see these traditional sports teams coming in investing in the space, which I believe is really, really great for the maturity of it, it starts to just add a more clear lens of a way to understand the space, because esports truly is a spectator sport. And esports in itself is a term just like sports. You know, if you look at sports in a hierarchy, you have the NBA, you have the NFL, or make it even maybe not league-wise, you have soccer, basketball, football, baseball, you name it. Well, in esports, you have Call of Duty, Counter-Strike, League of Legends, Overwatch, right? So it's really just a new way of talking about sports in a sense. And I do believe that we're seeing the maturity happen at the investment level, because what you're taking is a grassroots esports team, you're pairing them with a traditional sports team that has a lot of infrastructure and financial resources and experience managing both talent, bringing people in the door. They know sponsorships, they know how to structure agreements, right? And it's not to say that esports teams don't, but they're lending knowledge to each other. Esports on the grassroots side for the knowledge of the new industry, and then at the traditional side, the knowledge of an older and more established industry. And those two coming together just has been a natural fit. And I think sponsors are now starting to understand that in a much more strategic sense as well. But I believe where sponsorships will change is that the days of a logo slap or a, you know, owning like a spot, I do believe they will become less and less templated and start to be more heavy on the custom side. So we're seeing that in our discussions, having such a large audience on a global scale, a sponsor saying, what is something that no one else is doing, and how do we inject ourselves naturally and organically into the conversation you're already having with your audience? Right, and it's far less about a commercial spot, and it's more so about an integration spot. I think integration is a huge key word when it comes to sponsorships and how they're going to be administered in the future. And then from the brand side, I'm speaking about teams. So from the organization side, working with brands, it's also going to be less, or maybe not less, but it's not only going to be about sponsorships and injecting them into the conversation through the promotional sense. But I think it'll be more of how do they come together to do something unique in terms of content, right? So if a brand like ours is looking at saying, hey, we're thinking about a subscription or a paywall or some form of over-the-top experience where fans are getting a lot of value at it, how do we incorporate a brand into that? Or how would a brand like to be incorporated into that? So there's a lot of co-marketing initiatives, joint venture in a general term, not from the official establishment term of saying, what could we do that is different that allows a brand to own the marketing in a certain space that does drive a lot of value? And what is that value worth? I think teams are going to be confronted with what is the true value that they're offering to a brand in a space given the size of their audience and the unique objectives they're trying to complete. But that said, we are seeing it mature and it is exciting, and there's a lot of good things that I still believe are yet to come.
Yeah. I do think that there's a pretty under-discussed crisis. Maybe that's slightly over-dramatic, but there's a under-discussed weakness of kind of the state of esports at the moment, which is the lack of unique storylines behind why what a team's identity is out of game. And I feel like there are only a few organizations that have been able to do that well over the last few years. I think Optic is definitely in there. G2 Esports have done a fantastic job. Fnatic as well. But quite a lot of the other esports organizations that have been around for a while, I still think if you looked at their logo and what team they're representing, it'd be very hard to kind of summarize what emotional, tangible feelings that you would get and actually affiliate from that brand. And I think that's kind of one of the really interesting discussions that a lot of endemic organizations have to have internally is, what does this mean to us? What does this mean to our fans? And therefore, what will this mean to brands that want to partner with us? So I've been having that conversation quite a lot over this year and at the back end of last year, and it's quite interesting to hear what esports teams are, what their priorities are. I mean, you've got like a super local and regionalized approach of team vitality that has its pros and cons. They have almost exclusivity for all of the top French brands, but maybe don't appeal to an international audience, but that's still like a very respectable model. And then you've got someone like Fnatic, which is definitely European based, but has truly gone global with where their teams are based, in an attempt to kind of position themselves as a lifestyle brand. So it's quite interesting just to see how the chips all fall based on kind of the unique identities that team can build, what impact sports organizations investing will have on that. And I think as esports actually continues to regionalize through franchise leagues or elsewhere, then we're going to start to see those stories being made pretty organically as well. Ryan, I know that you don't have a massive amount of time, so let's kind of skip through onto some rapid fire questions just real quick. We're trying to kind of expand the Esports Roundtable podcast to cover more than just the business of esports. We really want to get a deeper understanding of, you know, who you are and what you stand for and what lessons we can learn from you. So along your journey, who's the biggest mentor been for you in esports or outside of the industry? And what's the best piece of advice that you've received?
Yeah, you know, this is it's a unique way to answer this, but a lot of my mentors, I use it plural on purpose, have actually been books. And I wish as a kid I would have listened to people tell, I would have listened when people said, read, read, read. And I've just been reading a lot of those business books that are designed, whether it be from a leadership perspective, a sales and influence perspective, people management perspective. And I've just found tremendous value in learning and applying what successful people have done to build their careers, right? This could be everyone from like an Abraham Lincoln, you know, going way back to someone like a Gary Vee, who's, you know, is a very strong go-getter, knows how to turn things around, to like a Dale Carnegie, who's wrote a lot about business. And man, there's so many different examples out there, but each one pulling from that has actually been quite helpful in developing my own leadership style and my own people management style. And you'll see that a lot of these books, they have a lot in common, actually. And a lot of it is almost the same lesson, just being told from another's perspective. So it allows you to develop a very well-rounded approach.
Yeah, I was actually reading How to Win Friends and Influence People after having the conversation with you actually at the start of the year.
Yeah.
And I was kind of shocked to realize just how dated the book is based on the examples, but just how completely timeless all of the lessons are. I think it was first published in the 1930s, 40s or 50s or something, but all of those lessons about how you approach people, what the kind of mental state you take into social interaction would be in it. And it's not worded in a manipulative manner at all, like the title might make you assume. It's purely just trying to maximize yourself as being the most kind of positive and efficient human being and actually influencing others by doing so.
Absolutely, man. He goes into so many different examples and difficult situations, from people who are not performing well to people who have made mistakes to difficult people in general. It really has less to do about winning. The title can be deceiving. People probably read that and they say, okay, so if I apply that in today's age, it's like, how do I get my Facebook friend count to be like 5,000 instead of 50? And it's really not. It's just really about, like, people management happens in every stage of life. And there's an effective way to do it, and there's some ineffective methods to doing it. So, knowing the difference between the two, you don't know what you don't know, but when you know the difference between the two, you can actually start making progress in very difficult situations, and you can even make really good situations even better. So reading has truly been a great example of mentorship. Audiobooks are great as well, right? Sometimes us as the way we learn, audio could be much more important. So
awesome. And I 100% agree, by the way, just quite cognizant of the time. In esports, it's widely known that there are no working hours. What's the kind of best tip or routine that you live by to maintain a healthy lifestyle working in the space?
Consistent exercise every day, preferably in the morning specifically, is always important. But it's not just about that. It really is a combination of truly eating right, truly reading and knowledge, and then exercising and spending time with people. Like, look, get out of your emails. Get out of your emails and go and have conversations with people. You will be surprised at how much you actually get done and how much ideation truly comes out of a conversation versus staying in your emails. If you're in your inbox, you're actually being managed by your emails. If you're one of those individuals that needs to always have it clean or cleared out, and I know we all have different preferences of how we work, but truly just take a step back and ask if that is actually getting the job done, if it's getting you closer to your goals, both on a personal level, a professional level. Sometimes email can be the most dangerous obstruction to our work days. And it's easy to get into emails on the weekends or when you're at your wife or husband with dinner or when you're with your kids. It's okay to turn off the notifications for a few hours and come back. I tried that one day and got anxiety at first about it, because I was like, what if I'm going to miss something and something goes wrong? Yeah. But at the end of the day, even though there were some things that I needed to address, everything was fine. It was no worse than it would have been if I would have answered it right on time. In fact, it ended up being better because I had more time to clear my head, think about the situation and digest and move forward. So really think about it from a multifaceted approach, and structure is a good thing. Try going to bed at the same time every night and waking up at the same time every morning. Right, go out and get one of those LED lights. You can actually go out and get the LED lights. There's like an app you can have on your phone and have them turn on in the morning at a certain time. So it's not just about an alarm waking you up. Like, wake up in a very nice and organic way. I've got like this bird tweeting things that wake me up in the morning, and then this light comes on. It's a very natural and organic way. I feel like I'm waking up in the forest, but it's, it's good. It's better than waking up in a cold, dark room where you're like, I don't want to get out of bed. Go through and look at those little details, man. It does really help add a more well-rounded lifestyle balance when it comes to managing your day and then having fun on the weekends or even weeknights, right? Weekends, right? Maybe that's not your time. Maybe it's during the weeknights. So.
That makes a lot of sense. I love the bird idea. I mean, I could dive off the board into this about kind of optimizing your mindset with light therapy and kind of how important that has been in Scandinavian countries, where the flux between how much or how little sunlight in the year there is absolutely huge. But that kind of works at the same time for how much screen exposure you have, whether you use programs like Flux to make sure that your eyes are actually getting a time to kind of wind and Dan had the other day. So yeah, all that stuff is super important, and I'll be taking some of those on board myself. To close off, if you had a motto, or if you have a motto, what would it be, and what does it mean to you?
Learn and apply. Learn and apply. Learn and apply. Learn and apply. I can't say it enough. Learn and apply. Taking the time to learn, whether that be through reading books, finding a mentor, staying up to date on what's happening in your industry, finding, it could be even something like learning a new language, right? Or learning how to negotiate better. Just taking the time to learn something and figuring out the best way to apply it. It gives you such a strong sense of productivity and a way to really develop as a human being that you're not only offering, you're not only increasing a valuable skill set, but you're also offering value to other people. And it's very holistic in a sense. So I always look at that at a professional level from learning and applying, but even on the personal level. And look, sometimes we think about it just in an academic type sense, but actually learning to, we'll go back to what we were talking about before, learning to turn off your cell phone on Saturdays for 12 hours. And you're applying that by not only are you turning it off, you're not bringing it with you, but then you're going out with a friend, or you're making time to spend time with people. When you start applying that, it really does open you up to just new ways of enjoying how you're living life, right? So I realize this goes outside the esports perspective per se, but it is totally a crossover and it's totally applicable. But learning and applying have something that I learned. Because I learned that I was not learning properly. We can actually go through life and be learning things incorrectly, and even the good lessons that we should be applying, we're actually learning to not apply them. We're just getting lazy with them. So confronting that and being honest with yourself about it, and then developing a good habit of learning and applying has it completely changed my life at a personal and professional level.
Awesome, man. Super inspiring stuff. I think inner self-reflection and applying that in a healthy context is super important, especially in this day and age when there's so much external input from social media and every other part of life trying to tell you who to be in and what you should be focusing on. So kind of not being a deer in the headlights and trying to focus down a single path or exploring multiple paths, I think, is pretty fundamental to finding happiness in the 21st century. So 100% agree. Well, that's all we have time for today, guys. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show. Looking forward to catching up in the next few weeks.
Me too, man. Can't wait to have you here. I'm excited.
Awesome. How can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch?
LinkedIn is my new preferred method. I spend most of my time there. So that or Twitter is a great way to engage with me in conversation.
Cool. And that's at OpticJ, right?
Yeah, the LinkedIn is the URL is R, and then M is in Musselman, USS, R Mus.
Yep.
And then Twitter is OpticJ.
Awesome. Well, guys, that's going to do it for the episode of the Esports Roundtable podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at ES Roundtable Pod. On Facebook, at Esports Roundtable Podcast. And I am at Barely Qualified. It'll be in the description. I'm not going to spell it for you guys again. We've got some awesome episodes rolling out in the lead up to summer. Hopefully, going to be speaking with some more guys from the team side, and also bringing on some household name, non-endemic brands down the line who are looking at and are excited about esports. So please do stay tuned. But until next week, have an awesome time, and yeah, we'll speak to you soon.